And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is Mike Gregg. This episode, we're going to be looking back at the season so far for Fulham and discuss where we stand right now. We'll also discuss an interesting article on Get West London by Paul Warburton today, which includes quotes from Fulham chairman Shad Khan. Lastly, we will discuss your questions for Mike Gregg that you left on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, along with one question for me. We have much to discuss, but before we get going, I always have to welcome my co-host back to the show, Mr. Mike Gregg. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Yeah, doing well. Looking forward to sort of seeing where we are as it stands now as we go into the second international break. And, you know, it's been a bit negative recently, but there are still some positives to look back on so far.
Absolutely, Mike. There are good things, and like you mentioned, there are bad things, and we'll get through it in this show today. And we do have some Fulham news. Like I said, I definitely want to discuss Paul's article, but I have a bonus topic for you that I want to start the show with. And I want to get your thoughts about the unveiling of the George Cohen statue. I know we talked about it, but now that I've seen the video, what are your thoughts about how the club handled this?
I was critical of them the other day on the show, saying they could have done a bit more. I still think it could have been handled better in certain ways, but I've not seen the statue up close. Didn't get a chance at the weekend to go and go around the ground and have a look. But there's some mixed reports on it, but it's there at the moment in a temporary position, is what they say. And if the stand ever gets built, I'm sure it'll be moved. But you know, we now have two statues representing, you know, two of our best and greatest players, really. And it's there now for everyone to enjoy. And, you know, you can be critical of the actual pose or the way it looks or whatever, but the main thrust of it is it's representing, you know, George, who played for ourselves and, of course, a World Cup winner. And it's a good tribute to him. And you know, the club got some good press out of it, but I still feel they could have handled it and maybe even made more out of the actual unveiling.
Okay, very good there, Mike. Listen, I've just seen the video. I actually saw, I want to say it was a Periscope that I saw after the fact. And it was just nice to see for me. You know, I'm glad that they posted that on the Fulham website. And I understand where you're coming on that, but I'm glad that we actually have a statue for George Cohen. And just want to mention a little side note. I actually heard from our Cottage Talk co-host, Craig Coben, who was at Craven Cottage on Saturday. He actually got to meet, I think it's one of his heroes. He got to meet Roy Hodgson. He was very excited. Mike, have you ever met Roy in person?
Very, very briefly, just to say hello. But, that was probably around 2009, maybe, just over in the Riverside area. But no, apart from that, I've not had a chance to meet him properly and have a chat with him at all.
Yeah, that's on my bucket list. Someday I would love to just to meet the man. Seriously, I would love to be Roy Hodgson. And that's why I just wanted to mention that, because Craig was so excited he messaged me that he met Roy. And I'm there with him because I would have been very excited myself. All right, let's get more into the show, and let's talk about the article by Paul Warburton. It is entitled, it's on getwestlondon.com. Fulham chairman spells out how player deals will be done in the future. So I'm just going to read the article to you, Mike, and then we're going to talk about it. This is right from Paul Warburton's article. It's verbatim, and so I'm just going to read it. So VC Jokanovic is going to have to get used to a Fulham setup where players are chosen by committee. After the head coach railed at stats analyst Craig Klein, whose contentious algorithm for new faces is loosely based on the Moneyball character played by Jonah Hill in the baseball movie, there were still 14 players to show for it. What's more, Chairman Shad Khan, in time for both the QPR Derby on Saturday and the NFL Wembley match between his other club, the Jacksonville Jaguars and Indianapolis Colts, reckons there's more of the same to come. The good news for Jokanovic, he can veto those that meet the Klein tick box criteria, but he can't pick them on his own. Here are the quotes from Shad Khan. Quote, why wouldn't you want to have a player the manager isn't going to play? offered Khan. Another quote, it would be crazy, wouldn't it? More quotes. But the approach we've had, you want to qualify a player on a number of different metrics, but the final judgment is the manager's. Fulham signed a rash of players and ran through a succession of managers to save their Premier League skins, all to no avail in 2014. Again, these are the words of Paul Warburton. Khan believes that it's all changed, and now here are some more quotes from Mr. Khan. Quote, we have more of a collaborative process, he added. Impetuously, which has happened, I probably said that wrong. There's a nice Goldman for you, Mike, which has happened at football clubs, including Fulham. We don't want that. We want more thought-out process where the manager has the final say, but other factors come into the process. Okay, Mike, before we break this down, I do want to mention that there is one word that you and I have contacted the writer, Paul Warburton, about, and that is when he has the quote, why wouldn't you want to have a player the manager isn't going to play? We believe that he wanted to say, that Mr. Khan wanted to say would, but Paul let us both know that he actually has the quote verbatim. So these are just his words. So, Mike, talk a little bit about that and also what Paul Warburton shared with these quotes from Shad Khan.
Okay, yeah. So we deal with that little line, which it, on the article it says, why wouldn't you want to have a player the manager isn't going to play? Having contacted Paul, he said that he quoted verbatim what Khan said, but he did think about changing it to why would you want to have a player the manager isn't going to play? And his understanding is that's probably what Khan meant. So you don't know when this interview was done. Was it a sit down? Was it standing up outside this stand where the unveiling was? You know, was it a quick quote? You know, that kind of thing. But I would take it as, why would you want to have a player the manager isn't going to play? And that's exactly the point, isn't it? You know, this is
right.
This article today has again raised the issue about how Fulham are signing players. And I, as I've said before on the show, I'm in favour of committee is probably the wrong word, but you know, having checks and balances in place to make sure you don't end up with a manager who comes in, fills the team with all his players, in the sense of the way that Harry Redknapp would go from club to club and sign Prankar and other players. Sam Allardyce, you know, Kevin Nolan would follow him all over the place. And we've had it with Martin Jol, where he would get, you know, Steckenberg would come in and sign because he's Dutch, you know, because Joel's Dutch as well. And each manager, of course, brings their own identity. But it also lumbers you with players the next manager probably isn't going to want. And you, instead of giving the club a individual identity with that manager every time, they want a much more structured long-term plan. So that if a manager's only survived, what is it now, 14 months, if they're lucky, 15 months?
Yep.
If a new manager comes in and he sees players on three-year contracts, And that's what we've done this time. You look at the contracts some of these players have been given. They're all long, you know, vast majority are long term. You want to make sure that they can work with those players. So who picked those players? And you read the article and you read other articles and you can be sort of, no, it should be the manager. He's the one who should say yes and no. Well, according to the article, according to other articles, Jokanović does have the option of saying no to players that are put forward to him. And yes, and my understanding is that every player who's come through the door, he has said yes to. And but of course it works the other way. Players he has wanted, apparently, have got the cross against them by Klein. And so he's been unable to get them through. So this two-box system, this checks and balances, is a little bit unbalanced at the moment, maybe, because we understand he wanted to get a youngster. There were no stats for this player, so that box couldn't be ticked. So it's probably a work in process, in progress. It's not ideal. There's obviously issues with the Klein, who does all the stats, and you hear that from various sources that, you know, he's a difficult person to work with. But the whole way of running the club with regards signings and not the manager just having, you know, the be-all and end-all is the right way for a club our size to go. That's what I believe. It's not perfect. And because when we started well at the beginning of the season, everyone sort of brushed it aside. Now we're not doing very well. Everyone's looking for excuses as to what's the problem. And we can talk about some of that later. But really, it's there. While Khan is the owner, I suspect it's going to stay there. And even if Khan sold up, I'm still a fan of the director of football type of route and collaborative ways of signing players. So it's here to stay. And in a way, we as fans have to get used to it. But I just wish, again, confusion with this article, Russ. I just wish the club could somehow get over to the fans the exact process, not the ins and outs of it, but the exact process of what they are doing when they are signing players, who says no, who says yes. And I want that explained from the club, not via a newspaper. I want it from the club to the fans. And to get rid of any confusion and even have a question and answer session, and at least then we'd all be on the same page and know what way we're going.
See, I'm there with you, Mike, and I think Liverpool have struggled with this. You know, the word committee, you know, talk to Liverpool supporters a few years back, and they'll tell you about that. And I wouldn't be against at all what you just said. Be a little bit more transparent. Maybe just tell us a little bit about the process. You don't have to give away your secrets, but you can just tell us how everything works. I know that here we have Shah Khan saying that basically Slavica has final say, but I hear what you're saying. You want to hear it from the club. Let me ask you this, because while you're talking about this and you're talking about building a system to say once Slavica leaves, you know, you hope he doesn't, but, you know, mathematics here, at some point he's probably going to leave. I want to give you a comparison. You tell me if I'm going on the same wavelength here, Mike, with you on this. I see Fulham trying to build something similar to what goes on at Southampton. I watched a documentary on Southampton, and basically it really is about the Southampton way, how they can survive change of managers and really, really don't miss a beat because they're doing it in a certain way. Do you see a comparison to how Southampton is doing it to maybe how Fulham's doing it now?
Well, I think that's certainly a blueprint. We've sort of taken the youth, we've taken their staff for a start, but you know, the actual policy of the way the club runs is the way, you know, the owners at Fulham want it to run as well. They almost want to be able to drop in a coach. You're going to work with these players. Yes, you can have a say on who you're going to play. And let's clear one thing up. Jokanović picks the team. You know, I've seen some things written today, oh, he's not picking the team. He's being told to play certain players. I just don't believe that.
I don't believe that.
He picks the 11 that start. And but, yeah, I mean, that process of I read in the article maybe a couple of months ago in the summer. Well, I'm not sure it was Khan who was quoted, but it was said, we're trying to eliminate mistakes. And so we've signed however number of players we've signed this year. But, I mean, if you go through the list, okay, we're not doing very well, and you can say that a number of the players are not quite up to it or they're not performing. But if you go through that list, you know, Maddle we signed after he played for us last year. Aiti's injured, but did well. Aluka, okay. You know, he missed the penalty. Adoree, Malone, Button, McDonald. All these players who have signed they seemingly are all first-team squad players. Whereas you
That's
go
right.
back to last summer and the summer before that, and players being signed left, right, and centre, who in the end never even got a look in. They just weren't good enough quality. You know, go back to, if we have to, go back to the McGaff summer.
Oh boy!
And some of the you know, four or five players there. Okay, they may not have been on a lot of money, but they're taking up squad positions. They're taking a few thousand pound a week out of club, and that's what they're trying to do, is eliminate those kind of managerial wants. You know, I want this player, even though we all know he's no good. and then also throwing this money away. So, my concern, as I said in the opening bit there, is there's going to be some players where the stats won't stack up. It'll be all about potential. It'll be all about youth. And, sometimes you do have to take a gamble. But looking at the list of players, we've signed so far, you can see there is a pattern of solid within the leagues they are from. And so you can see that's what they're trying to do, is just eliminate these mistakes.
Yeah, Mike, that's what I definitely think they're trying to do. I think they're trying to eliminate the bust, because there have been several busts with Fulham. It happens on most teams. So I think they're trying to get that down to close to zero as possible. It's impossible to get it to zero, but I think they're trying to increase the odds that they won't have as many busts. And I applaud them for that. But like you mentioned, you're not going to reach 100%. But let's talk about the system, because you brought up something that actually interests me. The system itself, if it's really rigid, Mike, and say Savisa doesn't get a player because there are no stats on them, personally, I hope that over time they make adjustments to their systems, because I think that they really should look at everything as a whole, as a living, breathing thing, and see how things work out, because there might be a situation similar to what happened recently with Savisa wanting to play. They just don't have the stats for it. They should be open to not being so rigid. Does that make sense? I think that the system right now is extremely rigid. I hope that they adjust it over time. Learn from it.
Yeah, and I think that's, I think that's what's going on in a way. But then, what do you do? Do you give the coach, the manager, a joker to play? He has a couple of jokers that he can play every year that, okay, I want this player, I'm playing my joker, sort of thing. Override the stats man. That has to come with belief in your coach as well.
Right.
But, Jokanović would have signed up for this. It's another thing, he might moan about it, but he will have known when he signed on the dotted line, this is the process. And I was told very early on, after Simons was sacked and we hadn't appointed anyone yet, was discussing Jokanović with CEO and Mike Rigg, actually, in an FST meeting, and they said, Jokanović is used to working with a director of football, has no problem about that, wants to be a coach, on the training field. So he will have known exactly what he was walking into, and if he's not happy with it, then he has his option, which every manager has and sometimes do, and that's to walk away. And, we
sure.
don't want him to do that because we don't want more upheaval. But it's an evolving process, and I'm sure they're learning every window. And there needs to be a bit of flexibility. If you're going to run it like so rigid, then you are going to have problems all the time. So someone somewhere has to manage the process. So let's say it's Mike Rigg. If he's the one who's got to manage this process and is in charge of all the footballing, then the football stuff, then that's what he's got to do. He's got to make the call, hasn't he? But, we will see how this plays out over the next month or two. And depending on our position in January, we will see if the two-box system is still in place.
Okay, very good, Mike. Before we move on to this, a little follow-up. Let's talk about Craig Klein and the signings, because obviously he's one checkbox here. It's his stats. So thoughts on the signings? Again, we're reviewing what we've seen so far. So talk about the job that Craig Klein has done, and I guess you could say on checking one of the boxes with these signings.
Well, the thing is, it's not only him. There's a myth, isn't there, that every player we've signed has come from his direction. We don't know that. Jokanović may well have put, I know Dennis Adoye. Well, he certainly knew Hozabad, that's for sure. And so it's, here's a player I want, check the stats against him, check the scouting reports. That's how it works. Both columns are ticked, then we're able to sign with a three-agreed deal. And so you look at the signings that we've done. Like I say, Maddle we had on loan was pretty much an obvious choice for us to sign. Aiti, he's done well, and there's quite a few. You know, it's interesting that our form has dipped since he's become unavailable. Aluku is on a bit of a downer with the fans at the moment after his penalty miss and lack of goals, really. And there's some people questioning what's his best position, what should he be doing, should he be in the team? So he's still got a little bit to prove. Adoi, yeah, started so well against Newcastle, got the bit, you know, the bit of skill, which is there for everyone to see off his back. But I think he's been found out a couple of times as a defender. And the interesting thing there is he was signed as a left-back. We're yet to see him play at left-back in the league. So once Fredericks comes back, we have Malone and Sessegnon on the other side. So that's going to be an interesting choice. And I go on to Malone. Now, Malone was, you know, it's lit.
I think he's been a pleasant surprise, Mike.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that him and Sessegnon are fighting for that left-back position. And the way they're alternating, the way Jokanović is alternating them, I think it's keeping them both fresh, keeping other teams unsure of who they're going to be facing because they both offer different things. But Malone has been a pleasant surprise. He has his faults, you know, like any player. But for me, an upgrade on Jazz, and, you know, if that was a swap deal, those boxes were definitely ticked. So I was very happy with that. Then we have Button, the goalkeeper. Is he an upgrade on Bettinelli? I would have to say he is, but not by a huge amount. But of course, we can talk about his kicking. But I think that goes with every goalkeeper. I think the way we're being asked to play, and I said it on the pre-match show the other day, is making every goalkeeper nervous. So we can see Bettinelli come in, who we know is not that great, you know, with the ball close to his feet. And it was noticeable the other day that Button was kicking it quicker, kicking it longer, not always looking to pass it out. So maybe they're changing it there. But I think he's done okay. He's made a few useful saves. The first goal the other day was a deflection, didn't have much to do with it. But at the moment, I think he still has the number one shirt. McDonald's started well, but then, you know, it's faded and now suspended. Posabad, we've not really seen enough. Sigurdsson, we're all happy with him signing, but again, him coming into the team has seen us in a bad run, and is he finding it difficult adjusting to a much more physical championship? Cabano, for me, has been the biggest disappointment, Russ. I had high hopes for him, but he's flattering to deceive at the moment. He's coming on a sub or starting, but is he actually doing anything? Missed a golden chance the other day. So
Should have scored.
I should have done, yeah. So he has a lot to prove for me. Johansson, it was interesting that he wasn't even in the 18 the other day.
I know.
But for me, he looks an interesting play. A bit of drive, but, you know, is his form that bad to be dropped straight from the 18 after a couple of games? Because I thought in a cup game he was one of the best players. To the loanees, Pearson, we've seen a couple of times. Thought he should have shot or put the ball past the goalkeeper when he was one-on-one the other day, but did score in a cup game, and, you know, he's got a touch of skill on him. But physically, again, I wonder if he's strong enough. Chris Martin, he couldn't buy a goal at the moment. But, you know yourself and the Derby fans. He does score goals, but there isn't...
He does.
Is there a problem? Is there an underlying problem there? I've had a couple of people mention to me that some personal issues that may be causing him to...
I've heard as
well,
Mike.
Not performing to his best. But actually, I think he's getting sharper every game. Yes, he missed a chance the other day. I don't think it was as easy as everyone thinks it was. He should have scored, don't get me wrong, before anyone starts tweeting in or saying it was an open goal. But, Yeah, he just needs a goal any way he possibly can. For me, the best signing and the one we're missing really now is Callis.
I know who you're going to say, and I agree with you. I know who you're going to say. Go ahead.
Thomas Callis is. He has been excellent for me. He does everything quietly. He's got a bit of drive about him as well when he's got the ball. Decent pass, looks unruffled. And he, for me, is the biggest loss at the moment. And the quicker he gets back from injury, I hope it's over this two-week break, the better we'll all be. And you can see why he's so highly rated. And I think he's a real, absolute real asset for us. And I'm glad we've got him to the end of the season. But, I just hope
he's
too bad.
Mike, is he out of contract at the end of the season with the other club in Fulham?
No, he isn't. No.
Okay.
No, he isn't. He's a, and if we were, if there's any way we get promoted, he will be a key player for us to get promoted. And you, of course, would want to sign him.
Sure.
But they rate him high. I think they paid about $6 million for him anyway. But you know, that's what they do, don't they? They buy all these younger players and loan out four teams worth of players. But he's been really good. Who he should partner long term, you know, Maddle, Sigurdsson. Not sure, but he should certainly be the first name on the team sheet for me.
Okay, very good, Mike. And let me just start by saying a massive Goldman by me, because it is a two-check system, so we don't know if Craig Klein, which box was checked first, meaning who initiated, say, the Adoy signing. We think we know the Jota that potentially was coming from Sevilla because of his knowledge of Spanish football, but we don't know. So that was a silly way for me to start this conversation, but Mike did an excellent job of breaking it down.
Yeah, but Russ, it's coming from everywhere. It will be coming from whatever the computer prints out, and it will be coming from scouts reports, and it'll be coming from agents. It will be coming from Jokanović. This is the way it's been explained to me. Everyone involved with the club is involved in putting players forward. There's nothing wrong with even the CEO or anyone putting a player forward, say, look at this guy. They will look at the scout reports and they will look at the stats. And if those two boxes tick, then there's a possibility. And that's how it works. So it's not Jokanović being fed these players off of the computer system. It just isn't like that. And I know that's what upsets fans, but it's just not true. That's not how it's working.
No, very, very good, Mike. I'm glad that you explained that, because I think that there's a misconception regarding the process. You know, again, we don't know for sure. This is what we're hearing. And the one thing that was good about the beginning of doing the show is that we could talk about the fact that Shah Khan says, you know, that basically Sevisa has final say, because he can veto. He can say no on a player, but he needs that other box ticked for him to get the player. And like you said, it could be coming from all different sources, but both boxes have to be checked. It's checks and balances, like you said. And hopefully over time they make some adjustments to this system. That's my hope, that they learn from each window and they make adjustments moving forward. All right, Mike, very, very good, very interesting discussion about the article, then of course talking about the signings. Before we move on from this, who has been your biggest disappointment so far in a signing? Was it Cabano?
Yes, it has been Cabano, actually. He's we all watch the video stuff, and you know, we apparently have paid, you know, somewhere in the region of $3 or $4 million for him. I can see Hozabad and what he offers, but he's just not getting the runouts. But Cabano, I'm expecting pace, finishing, crossing, directness, and it's all blind alleys at the moment. And we need to see more from him.
Okay. Mine might be a little bit unfair, and that's Sonny Aluko. And it doesn't just have to do with the last match, Mike. I really thought that once he got to us that he would score goals. And I understand that his past with Hull was up and down, but I thought that he would, if in the right situation, he would score goals. He has scored goals, but it hasn't been consistent enough. And with us, he hasn't scored any. So even though it was a free, my expectations were that he would score goals, and he scored none. So that's why he is my biggest disappointment.
Yeah, I can understand. He has got a goal for us, hasn't he? I'm pretty sure he has. But
has he?
I can understand that. But I said when I saw him pre-season, if we get 8 to 10 goals out of him, we'll be doing very well, and I can see more assists. But his assists only seem to happen when Sessegnon's on the pitch. But yeah, I can see that, and I think he's disappointing a few players. The question is, have they signed him as a striker or a number 10 or a winger? And it
exactly.
seems that he's playing as that kind of player behind the strikers. Although the other day he was closer to Martin. It was more 4-4-2. But, yeah, again, another player who, you know, he had two gilt-edged chances, obviously one with a penalty, and then also that, you know, he was put through in that shot in the second half. Yeah, he should be doing a lot better.
And, of course, Mike, I am proven wrong again. Another goalman for me, yes, he has scored a goal. So I look like a bigger idiot than I already am, my friend. Yes, he has scored a goal. I just checked.
It's only one.
Right. It's only one. But I actually thought he would score some by now. So, yes, Russ Goldman wrong again. He has scored a goal. All right, Mike. Let's now talk about something that you and I did a year ago. And we talked about this on the last show, but I want to talk about it a little bit more. You and I met in New York City. I actually got a Facebook post that reminded me that it was actually a year ago yesterday that you and I met. And I remember just us having this conversation, basically looking at the math at the time. The one thing that stood out to me was talking about where Fulham were at that point and where they needed to be moving forward, because like you had told me back then, the top six really do form after maybe 12 to 15 matches. Well, we're pretty much there, Mike. So here's my topic for you. Compare where we were when you and I met a year ago with Kit to where we are now with Savica. Are we better now?
Well, positionally-wise, a year ago we played 10 games. Now we played 11. But if we just look at just as both times, we were just entering another international break. And we were 13th last year after we drew with Charlton. And, of course, today we sit 14th, although a game more. And we've now got a couple of points more than last year. So points per game, we're just slightly better, just slightly, but not enough. So really, year on year, positional-wise, points-wise, we've stood still. We've not improved, not gone backwards either. So despite changing a manager, getting rid of a load of players, bringing in a load of players, a year later, we are pretty much exactly where we were when we met. So stats-wise, and you know, I will apologise to the listeners straight away, but this is the stats zone. yes, you are right. I do have a theory that the table pretty much sets itself once you reach about that sort of 13 to 16 game window. I've looked back over all the years, and if you're in the top six, you've got a 50. After 13 games, if you're on the top six, you've got a 50% chance that you're going to be there come the end of the season. And your actual positions change maybe up three, down three on average. You know, you do have exceptions. Teams go on a massive run, that kind of stuff. But really, for the listener, the easiest way to think about it is to, on average, you need 73 points for sixth place. You want 1.6 points per game. So after 10 games, you want 16. After 20, you want 32, and so on and so on. And at the moment, we in the show we did about the fixtures, Russ, all that time ago, back in the summer, we had an easy start to the season. And I looked back on my notes I made for that. And really, at this point, I wanted, given how easy, technically easy the games were, we really should have been at 20 points. If we were going to go by the average I want, then we needed 18. So you can see it looking at the table today. 18 points gives you that seventh or eighth place, which is not unusual. So that would be fine. So we're 4 to 6 points behind where we should be. So we need to start making that up somewhere. And you, for the American fans listening, they're going to understand this. Using baseball sort of standings, Russ, you know, when they talk about games back,
yep.
How many games you're back, we're 5 games back. That's what I make it. It's going to take for us to get back on track and to get to sixth place, we need to win 5 on the trot. So to catch up with the average I need for us to have a long-term target. So it's not impossible for us to catch up slower than that, you know.
Sure.
But really, for the rest of the season, for us to be 6, we need to be the fourth best team in the league.
Wow.
So, enjoy that while you're eating your dinner.
Wow. Those stats are pretty sobering, Mike. But listen, you were proven right last year, and your stats have proven out pretty much, you know, because I know that you've gone back several years. And that's why when you say this, I know there's a good amount of data behind it. So that's what's scary. So yes, five games back, I understand what you mean by that. That's significant. You can make it up.
Yeah.
But it,
you can.
It takes time. What?
You can make it up. You can make it up slowly over the season. But what we really, because we messed up the beginning, we do.
Yeah.
We now, if you want to talk about batches of games, we've had 2 batches of games, you know, where we started well, had the international break, then we've had a terrible run, and now we've hit an international break again. And we now have a run of another 5 games up to the Brentford game before another break. and really, you know, after the Brentford game, we would have played 16. And you really want to have, after 16 games, 25 points, 26 points. So you look at that yourself. For us to reach that, we have to win 3 and draw 2, or, you know, win 4. So we need a run from somewhere. We need to turn the whole thing around. Just as it changed from when we went into the break and we played poorly, we now need to change it around and have a bloody good run, because otherwise we sacked Kit around the time, beginning of November, because we were too far behind playoff position.
Right.
There is a danger. Now, if they're going to stick to the same criteria and rules, if we don't have a certain number of points by the Brentford game, then do they treat Jokanović the same way as they treated Simons last year? I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong, but I'm pretty sure they will have given him a target and he needs to be close to that. And I would argue that if he's not if he's not in the 20s, 22 maybe, 21, 22, I reckon he's in danger if they play by the same rules as they did with Simons.
Very interesting, Mike, because I'm looking at the fixtures. You know, we're on 14. Here are the next 5 matches that you're talking about, right? We have Barnsley away. That's followed up by Norwich City at home. Then we're on the road against Aston Villa. I know where Aston Villa is, but it's still Aston Villa. Then you're home, but you're facing Huddersfield Town. We know how they're playing so far this season. And then you have the Brentford match at Griffin Park. So these are interesting matches, Mike, because these are not easy fixtures coming up. And but I agree with you. I think they're going to probably, to be where you want them to be, they have to win 3 or 4. And that's going to be hard.
Well, yeah. But if you actually look a bit further, Russ, as it stands at the moment, we are playing 5 teams in a row. Once we play Huddersfield, then we've got Brentford, then we've got the break, then we've got Sheffield Wednesday, Brighton and Reading. Those 5 teams are in the top 9. And that's not even taking into account Norwich, who we play in a couple of weeks. So, you know, they are a bunch of hard fixtures. So when I say, you know, at the 16th game when we play Brentford, we've still got some bloody hard games afterwards. And, you know, it's not looking good unless we can turn that form round after this international break. But, of course, on the other hand, if we do well and come out of it at the other end, on form, having a run and, you know, back challenging, then that sets us up well for the next set of games. But, yes,
sure.
They are hard games coming up. And
I agree.
We're gonna see what we're made of. And, of course, if it goes the other way and we're not playing well and we're still in this bad run, then you're going to be even closer to the relegation zone. And
oh, we don't want to have that.
we don't want to be struggling around, you know, at worst. If we say that this season is a dead loss and you're not going to make the top six, at worst, you don't want to be any lower than 14th.
I agree. You know,
if we're going to bob around in the middle of the table, then fine, let's just do that. But we do not want to be down at 17, 18, 19 again. And he won't last long if we are in that position.
No, I agree, Mike. Before we move on from this topic and then get to some topics for you, do you feel better about the team compared to last year? Because I know where we are, you know, and we really haven't had time to really analyze the, you know, the before the international break, then after the international break. But do you feel better about this team now than you did, say, a year ago?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we haven't got time to go for every game, and we don't really want to do that. We've spoken, you know, at length about every game this season. But, yes, year on year, positional-wise, we're just the same. But squad-wise, for me, we are miles better. And I mentioned about Madel last week to you, Russ, when I said, you know, last year he was the best centre-back we had out of the squad we had. You know, so you had Byrne, Hutchison, Bodaroff, you know, anyone else you can mention. He was the best player. We've stepped up. You know, we've gone to the next level where you bring in Callis. Hopefully Sigurdsson's also at that kind of level. And Madel is not a first choice straight away, whereas he was last year. And that's what I look at. I look at some of the other players as well. And you can see the qualities they have, but it's Jukanovic has to get them working somehow. And the international break last time came at the wrong time. It was the transfer window. We were on a decent run, playing really well. And then he's brought these other players in. They weren't all there to work over the international break because they were off playing for their countries. They're back for two or three days, and I don't think he's had the real chance to integrate them all into the team and play the system that for me was working fairly well up before the first break. And you know, lots of possession, which I might upset some people, it doesn't upset me. And you know, maybe not creating as much. But you look at the last two performances, it is coming together. You know, Forest game, I don't think anyone can doubt that we played well. Anyone who was at the game and watched the 90 minutes. And then the other day, yes, we put in it a barn door, but we were creating chances.
And no, I hear you, Mike.
Yeah, so there is an improvement there, and all you can hope is that with the players who are left at the training ground, that Jukanovic and his coaches look back over the season, look back at games, look back at errors they've made as well, and look at the positives, and come out of these 2 weeks, once all the players are back, probably Wednesday week, start working on the Barnsley game and the games coming up, and try and find that formula that's going to get us back to winning ways. And that's all we can hope for, really. We are in a slump. We have to get out of it. And that's going to be, you know, it's going to be the manager's job.
I totally agree, Mike. And, you know, it's funny because I was going to ask you to really share your overall thoughts of what was working early on and then what went wrong after the international break, up to this international break. You pretty much have already talked about that. So that's going to lead me to now go in and share some questions for you, and it's pretty much going to be around this theme that we're already talking about, because people want to know what went wrong, how can we fix it kind of questions. So it's going to start with James Eat. He asks us simply, Mike, Where do you think it all went wrong? From unbeaten in seven to winless in seven, Mike.
Okay, well, I think we underestimated Aiiti, how important he's been, the hard work that he does. But I think it's too many options. I think, you know, we had the end of the transfer window, we had the international break, all at the same time. And sometimes you can have too many players and too many options. And I think that's partly what's happened. And we've ended up with all these attacking midfielders, all these busy bees, as I call them. And he can't find the right combination. And then players like Tunnicliffe and Christensen, who, okay, were only mainly subs at the start of the season. Certainly Christensen's found himself dropped. And, you know, then we've had the injury to Callis. We've had, you know, McDonald's form suddenly drop off a cliff for three games. And I think it's, and also, of course, Martin coming in. We all knew we needed a striker. And is he the right one? That's still to be proved. I think we all agree that, you know, whatever Smith and Woodrow offer, it's not top quality for the championship if you're aiming to go up. We got away with that probably for the first few games, but the failure to probably sign another striker of quality has left us short up top. And if Martin was on form, it'd be fine, but he's off form. So then you have to look at the next players, and they're not quite good enough. So we should have either gone big for a main striker and hope that worked, or two other strikers at least. So one striker short, I think, is a problem. And trying to integrate all these new players, Hozabad, Cabano, you know, those kind of guys, and Johansson, and it's not quite worked. And that's what I said earlier. He's got to find a formula, a way that he can get the best out of these players. Yeah, because I think defensively, apart from the Bristol game, you know, defensively we've been okay. There was a bit of a lapse, maybe looking at personal errors on Saturday. But all in all, we are defending better as a team, certainly compared to a year ago. I just think he's got a bit confused with what he actually wants. And how to get the best out of Tom Cairney is now an issue as well. His form has gone, and he doesn't look happy. And whereas he looked the most important player for those first four or five games, he now looks peripheral to actually what's going on.
Yeah, but that's on Cairney, Mike, but that's also on Jokanović. He has to get the most out of these players. And I know we've talked about this before, being out of position. I know it's an old topic, but he needs to figure out how to turn him back on. That's part of his job as the head coach. And like I said, it's also on Cairney, but that's what he needs to do. He needs to figure this out. And like you said, maybe too many choices, injuries, all these things add up. But I'm glad that you brought up the defense. The defense is better. Let's say it what it is. It hasn't been perfect, but I think it's much better than it was last season. And that was needed. I think if you start there, Mike, if you start with building up the defense and we get that done, I truly believe eventually he's going to figure out how to score goals, how to get the goals to come. Because you've said, and you and I have talked about this, I think the passing stats are great because one, they can be a little bit worrying because we're not creating enough pure goal opportunities, but we're getting closer and closer. I think eventually the opportunity, the passing will lead to more proven opportunities that will lead to goals. I think it's all coming. But for me, it does start with the defense, and that's why I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged because I think the defense, once Callis comes back, is really going to solidify. So that's why I am still a little bit more encouraged, and I have to answer to that with a question to me in a little bit. But before we do that, I have a couple more questions for you. Colin Forknow, this is kind of going on the same conversation, Mike. What is it about the international break that messed our form, and do you think we will regain it after the next international break?
It was, I sort of touched on that. I had a look. We had the signings of Cabano, who went straight in against Blackburn, I think it was, and we signed Johansson, then we got Pearson and Martin on the last day. And of course, we signed these players, and then, you know, they've all gone off to go and play internationals. I think then Martin actually, when we signed him when he was with Scotland. So, you know, I think that was the issue. Suddenly he's brought four players in the space of a couple of days, really, and they've been dropped straight into training, and you know, that can't have been easy to try and integrate them in. And it is the break. I think, you know, it's momentum of this game, and it's, you get on a winning run, and, or, you know, a good run that we were on, and then suddenly it has to stop. And it can happen the other way. You're on a losing run, you get the break. This is what we're going to hope is going to happen now. And you get yourself sorted again, go back to basics, and start the Barnsley game, you know, hopefully with a win. But I think it was just momentum and the introduction of a couple of new players and maybe tweaks to the system that we've not really noticed, maybe certain things he was asking players to do. What we haven't touched on, Russ, is, you know, McDonald and Parker, whereas early on in the season that was working well. There's obviously something happened, or, you know, apart from McDonald's form, suddenly at home they look absolutely nullified. They can't work together at home, and you know, that's going to be he's got to find a solution for that.
I totally agree with you, Mike, because away from home I think it can be fine, but at home I think he needs to find a solution for that. All right, I've got two questions that kind of go together. Let's start with Joe Smythe. He also has one for me. But before we go to mine, these are for you. Again, from Joe Smythe. Should the blame be laid at the manager's door? He has made numerous mistakes with team selection, formation, and substitutions. All very worrying. How long will he be given to turn it around? And also, Ben Reed asks this for you. Mike, prediction time. Will Savisa last the season?
Okay. Well, it's easy for people to say he's made mistakes in selections and substitutions. And me and David Hulley have had a few remarks go to each other regarding the Parker substitution the other day. You know, was he injured? Wasn't he injured? How long was he on for? You know, I mean, you watch the replay. He got injured and he got subbed 2 minutes later. So how you could say he was, you know, fit or not fit, you can't really answer that question. But I'm not sure selection wise has he made a lot of mistakes. So if you take the cup games out, has he experimented or made a lot of changes game by game that wasn't forced? I don't think he has. And is he to blame for losing Saturday? Well, if you take the Parker substitution and use that, then yes, we lost something when he went off. But really, should we be relying on a 35-year-old, 36 actually, in a week or two, to carry us through games? You know, players, wasn't Jokanović's fault we missed all those chances the other day? And can I just cover this, Rush? You know, I see people talking about they should be working on their finishing. I mean, any athlete or, you know, any footballer, as they're progressing, as they're younger, they're going to be working on improving. And I'm not saying players should not try and improve as years go by. But if you're a 28-year-old professional, the chances of you actually improving your finishing and getting the coach to do training on finishing, I'm not sure that's the answer. A coach really is more about tactics, putting out the right team, getting the team the formation, telling them all what they should do. At that kind of age, they have the skills that they have, which can be honed a little bit. But, you know, Pearson one-on-one with a keeper should be sliding it past him. Instead, he plays a
don't
ball.
Don't get me started
almost,
on that one.
Yeah, you know, and then Aluku, you know, slices a ball wide. You know, I mean, so they're individual mistakes. So easy to play. But in the end, the buck does stop with the manager. You know, if they want the praise when they're winning, and they have to take it when they're losing. So
absolutely,
somewhere, seven games on the trot without a win, someone has to take the blame. So in the end, he will take the blame. And we talk about luck a lot, Russ. Oh, we've had a lot of bad luck and all this. I haven't seen that. The other day, actually, we got two penalties. One of them arguably possibly wasn't a penalty if you read the rules. And you know, we missed the, you know, we hit the post, but you missed an open goal. So there's not really luck there. We're not having bad luck, I don't think, and we're not having good luck either. We're just, at times, we're just not playing as a team and not finishing. But there right. has been little improvements the last couple of games, which is my only hope, is that we can, you know, take it on after the break. But he has to take responsibility, of course. You know, it's his team, and he was very clear about that the other day.
No, very good. Okay, Mike, I have to ask you, because Ben will message me.
Oh,
prediction
right.
for Slavisa, will he last the season?
No.
Okay. Well, hey, take a stand. At least you take a stand. I don't want to talk about one of our other co-hosts who always sits on the fence. At least you took a stand, Mike. Little dig at someone. But
I hope he does.
What?
I hope he does stay, Russ. But
yeah.
As it stands, I'm struggling to see him. I don't think we're going to get relegated. Don't get me wrong. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I don't. At this moment in time, we don't look like we're going to get promotion, and that's what he's employed to do.
Okay, very good. All right, a couple of questions. We only have 3 minutes. Real quick on this one, Mike. It's from our friend Roger Lewis in Spain. Do you think we should try a 3-5-2 without Martin, Woodrow, nor Smith as the two? I will choose. I'll let you choose the two up top, Mike. That's a little confusing.
No, I understand what he's trying to say there. I think once Fredericks comes back, you have that option, and I think he maybe should consider it. But there is an argument that if these guys up top aren't scoring, then yeah, you know, apparently Cabano can play up front, Aiti, Aluku, you know, I mean, these guys, they can all have a go up top. I mean, I joked earlier in the season we could have a 4-6-0 the way we've got so many attacking midfielders.
Okay, very good, Mike. Okay, final question goes to me. It's also from Joe Smith. This is what he asked me. Russ, you said that you wanted to see how we reacted after our first loss, and we have failed that test. What do you now see as being a realistic finish for us? And that's a tough one for me. But you know me, Mike. I'm still optimistic. I actually think Slavisa will last the season. I'm just going to say that I still think we can contend for top six. I have it at five. That realistically, I don't know if it could be top five. I'm just going to go now with just contending for top six. And maybe we can sneak it at the end. So I will just adjust it a little bit. But listen, it's who I am. I'm optimistic. I always think that we're going to figure it out. More often than not, with Fulham, we don't. But I'm still hopeful that we will. I actually believe in Jokanović. But we'll see if he proves me right or proves you wrong, Mike. I know you want him to succeed, but you've made a stand here. You don't think he's going to make it. We'll see. We'll see, and I understand why you made that prediction. Mike, we only got a little over a minute left. Final thoughts, my friend?
Yeah, so a mixed start to the season, obviously. I'm not writing the season off like some people. We still have a chance, but we're going to know a lot more over the next five games, and I've explained earlier why. And at best, I think we should be in the top eight, but we need to start winning and winning quickly.
I agree, Mike. I agree. You know, it has to happen fast. That's why I'm glad that we spent some time talking about the math, because the math is important. It has proven out over several years, and that's why around, like you mentioned, 13 to 15 matches in, that's when that top six really starts to form, and you cannot be too far away. So that's why a move has to be made soon, and that's why these next five matches are key. All right, Mike, it's time to wrap it up. Thank you so much, my friend, but we only have 10 seconds left, so we've got to go. For Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Mike. Have a great night, my friend. Thank you for
doing
it.
Cheers, Russ. Yeah, no problem. Speak to you soon.
Boys.